This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Nehemiah. Today, Pastor Sandy will be teaching through Nehemiah, chapters 4 through 6.
A couple of seasons ago, we were at the high school soccer game, and one of the parents made the comment, "It seems our coach plays only the hotheads and the rowdy kids." And you know, that was probably accurate. Because anger is a two-edged sword. At times it can get you into trouble. But at other times it can spur you on and it can motivate you. I mean, Matt got a little angry when he got thrown in the penalty box tonight and sort of shut the door too hard and shouldn't have done that. But he spent 4 minutes in the penalty box thinking about what he had done, and he channeled that anger in the right direction, and as soon as they let him out, he scored a goal. Go-ahead goal. Tying goal. That's what it was. But you know, a kid who never gets angry. I mean, if you get beat time after time after time, or if people are playing poorly or things are not going, if you never get angry, you know, you won't be successful. You've got to have a certain passion. You've got to have a certain desire. You've just got to learn to channel that desire and that passion in godly and in good, constructive ways. Nehemiah got angry, but he got angry for the right reasons. He was a good leader. Now, verse 7 says, "After serious thought," and don't just ignore that or skip over that, this is a mark of a true leader. After serious thought, notice he didn't act until he had given it some serious thought. He used his brain before he opened his mouth. Oh boy, if we could master that, we'd save ourselves a lot of problems, couldn't we? As the Italian philosopher once said, always use your noodle before you order the pasta. After serious thought, I rebuked the nobles and rulers and said to them, "Each of you is exacting usury from his brother." So I called a great assembly against them. Nehemiah called the people together for a town hall meeting. And I said to them, "According to our ability, we have redeemed our Jewish brethren who were sold to the nations. Now indeed, will you even sell your brethren, or should they be sold to us?" Then they were silenced and found nothing to say. I mean, had they come out of exile in order to exploit each other? That didn't make sense. Then I said, What you're doing is not good. Should you not walk in the fear of our God because of the reproach of the nations, our enemies? I also, with my brethren and my servants, am lending them money and grain. Notice Nehemiah had the opposite attitude. He was aiding the Jews. The Jews that were helping him, he was actually giving them money and giving them grain. And you know, doing it at cheap rates in order for them to be able to afford to continue to help him. "Please let us stop this usury." In other words, no more interest. You know, let's loan money to each other, but let's do it without interest. Let's help each other, not hurt each other. "Restore now to them, even this day, their lands, their vineyards, their olive groves, and their houses. Also, 1/100 of the money and the grain, the new wine and the oil that you have charged them." In other words, give them back what you've confiscated and then add some. Plus some benevolence. Give them 1/100 of the money and of the grain in addition to giving them back what you've taken from them. And so they said, "We will restore it and will require nothing from them. We will do as you say." And Nehemiah makes them take an oath and illustrates a warning. He says, "Then I called the priests and required an oath from them that they would do according to this promise. Then I shook out the fold of my garment and said, 'So may God shake out each man from his house and from his property who does not perform this promise. Even thus may he be shaken out and emptied.' And all the assembly said, 'Amen.' And they praised the Lord. Then all the people did according to this promise." But you got to hand it to Nehemiah. If he had not confronted this issue head on, it would have lingered, and it would have undermined the work on the wall. Verse 14, "Moreover, from the time that I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, from the 20th year until the 32nd year of King Artaxerxes, 12 years, neither I nor my brothers ate the governor's provisions." In other words, for the 12 years that he held the title as governor, he never drew a full salary. How commendable. Nehemiah was there to serve the people. The people were not there to serve him. He and his servants lived modestly, and they took only what they needed. But the former governors who were before me laid burdens on the people, heavy taxes, and took from them bread and wine, besides 40 shekels of silver. Yes, even their servants bore rule over the people, but I did not do so because of the fear of God. What a tremendous example Nehemiah was of a good leader. Indeed, I also continued the work on the wall, and we did not buy any land. Notice this, Nehemiah didn't use his time in office to build up some cushy retirement or create networks he could take advantage of once his term was over. He spent all his energy, his effort on the job at hand. He was all about rebuilding the walls. He says, all my servants were gathered there for the work, and at my table were 150 Jews and rulers, besides those who came to us from the nations around us. Nehemiah fed 150 of the workers at his own table, out of his own pocket. He wanted to help people who were helping him. He was there to serve them, not for them to serve him. Now that which was prepared daily was one ox and six choice sheep. Also fowl were prepared for me, and once every 10 days an abundance of all kinds of wine. Yet in spite of this, I did not demand the governor's provisions because the bondage was heavy on this people. He helped. He showed compassion on the people. I wonder if Creflo Dollar invites 150 people from his church to come and eat at his table out of his pocket. Or Eddie Long or some of those other guys they're investigating. I guess we'll see. Once Colonel Sanders of Kentucky Fried Chicken fame was on an airplane with a crying infant. Ever been there, done that? Flying on an airplane with a crying infant is worse than Chinese water torture. I mean, everybody was in the cabin was on an emotional edge. And the desperate mother, she was trying her best to get the baby to stop crying, but nothing she was doing was working. That's when the colonel asked if he could hold the baby. And within seconds, he had the baby asleep. He was rocking her on his lap. After giving the sleeping baby now back to her mom, a fellow passenger made the comment, said, oh, we really appreciate you for doing that for us. And that's when the colonel replied, it's the mark of a good leader. He said, I didn't do it for us. I did it for the baby. Hey, compassion was the real secret wet recipe that made that man great. And you know, it's compassion, it's caring, it's service to others that makes a true leader. A good leader in the church or the community or the home isn't out for number one to make his own life better at the expense of others. He cares about the welfare of other people. In verse 19, Nehemiah looks to God and not man for his reward. He says, remember me, my God, for good, according to all that I have done for this people. He looked to God for his reward, not to people. In chapter 6, the attacks against Nehemiah grow personal. Now it happened when Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem the Arab, and the rest of our enemies heard that I had rebuilt the wall, and that there were no breaks left in it, though at the time I had not hung the doors in the gates, that Sanballat and Geshem sent to me saying, come, let us meet together among the villages in the plain of Ono. Plain of Ono was 25 miles northwest of Jerusalem, equidistant from the Jewish capital and the Samaritan capital. It would have been about a day's journey for Nehemiah. The way the invitation comes across, it sounds very friendly. You know, there's been a little tension between us, but let's meet halfway and let's work out our differences. Hey, meet me in the plain of Ono. But Nehemiah, he smelled a rat. And when he heard the word Ono, he thought, you see it coming, don't you? Some of you saw it coming as soon as I read it in the text. So I'm not even going to say it. I can't help it. He said, oh no, there's danger ahead. Nehemiah had such good discernment. This was a setup. This was an ambush. Only a Yoko would go to Ono. That was good. Only a Yoko's going to go to Ono. Nehemiah concludes in verse 2, but they thought to do me harm. That's why they really invited him. This was a setup. He replies to their invitation in verse 3. So I sent messengers to them saying, I am doing a great work so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease while I leave it and go down to you? What a great response. Man, I like Nehemiah. Nehemiah has been commissioned by God to build walls around the holy city, not to attend meetings and get involved in irrelevant discussions. He knows his God-given calling, and he remains focused. He stays on task. Duffy Doherty was the former football coach for Michigan State Spartans. He once made this comment. When you play for the national championship, it's not a matter of life or death. It's more important than that. This was how Nehemiah felt about his work on the wall. What God calls me to do is more important than life or death. The glory of God is at stake. My life will mean more if I die tomorrow doing God's will than if I live for 100 years never attempting what God has called me to do. A work for God is always a great work, and it deserves our single-minded devotion. Here's the point. The right priorities protected Nehemiah from danger. We make ourselves vulnerable to the enemy's attacks when we forget what we've been called to do, when we get distracted, when we come down off the wall and start doing things we haven't been asked to do. You could put it this way. Leave your post and you'll be toast. Godly priorities kept Nehemiah safe. Verse 4, Nehemiah continues, but they sent me this message 4 times, and I answered them in the same manner. Man, you've got to admire Nehemiah's doggedness. 4 times he gets this invitation to attend these irrelevant meetings, and each time he refuses. Hey, if something's wrong the first time, it's probably wrong the second time, and the third time, and the fourth time, and the 400th time. Then Sanballat sent his servants to me as before, the 5th time, with an open letter in his hand. And it was written, it is reported among the nations, and Geshem says that you and the Jews plan to rebel. Therefore, according to these rumors, you are rebuilding the wall that you may be their king. What blatant lies. Nehemiah has no desire to rebel against the Persians, and he had no ambition in becoming a king. He had carefully sought the emperor's permission before he ever left Persia and undertook this mission. Geshem is trying to coax a defense from Nehemiah, get him to come down off the wall. Verse 7. And you have also appointed prophets to proclaim concerning you at Jerusalem, saying, there is a king in Judah. Now these matters will be reported to the king. So come, therefore, and let us consult together. Lies and more lies. Geshem falsely accuses Nehemiah. And he starts thinking, if he won't come to the plain of Ono to talk to us, maybe he'll come to defend himself. Same trap, though. Wants to get him down off the wall. Here's what Geshem didn't realize. This was not about Nehemiah. This was not about Nehemiah's reputation. Nehemiah had already made the decision, I'm going to take care of my character and let God worry about my reputation. I hope you make that decision. This is about God's glory in Nehemiah's mind. That's why he's going to let nothing distract him from the work. During the early days of the Salvation Army, William Booth was bitterly attacked in the press by religious leaders and by government officials alike. And whenever Booth was shown another blistering newspaper article, the general would reply, 50 years from now, it will matter very little how these people treated us, but it will matter a great deal how we dealt with the work of God. This is the perspective we all need. Don't worry about what people might say or think about you. Be concerned about what God will say and thinks about you. Then I sent to him saying, no such things as you say are being done, but you invent them in your own heart. For they all were trying to make us afraid, saying their hand will be weakened in the work and it will not be done. Again, they were just trying to intimidate them, to get them to come down off the wall. Now, therefore, O God, strengthen my hands. Once again, Nehemiah sees through the enemy's scheme and he asks God for strength to finish the task. Nehemiah reminds me of the skunk family. The skunk family was attacked from all sides, and so they huddled together in a circle. They all got their heads together. They huddled together. They held hands with one another. Suddenly, they bowed their heads and they closed their eyes. And the father skunk said, let us spray. That's what Nehemiah does. He denies the charges, he prays a prayer, and he stays focused on the work that God has called him to do. Here's the key to success. Spray, pray, and stay. In verse 10, obedience to Scripture protects Nehemiah. The enemy hatches another plot. Afterward, I came to the house of Shemaiah, the son of Delaiah, the son of Mehetabel, who was a secret informer. And he said, let us meet together in the house of God within the temple, and let us close the doors of the temple, for they are coming to kill you. Indeed, at night, they will come to kill you. He wants Nehemiah to flee into the temple to protect himself. But here's what he leaves out. Remember, it was a sin for anyone but a priest or a Levite to enter the temple. You see, Shemaiah is trying to scare Nehemiah into doing something that will disobey God. Nehemiah responds in verse 11, and I said, should such a man as I flee? And who is there such as I who would go into the temple to save his life? I will not go in. Nehemiah knew his Bible. He knew God's law. He knew that the temple was off limits to him. Before he ever discovered Shemaiah was an enemy operative, and that this was just a ploy, he knew he didn't want to disobey God. He would rather obey God and face the assassins than disobey God and face the Lord. Nehemiah refuses to fall into this trap for two reasons. First, it was not his nature to run. Notice he said, should such a man as I flee? I'm not going to run from anything. And second, he knows it's not his place to enter the temple. He knew God's word. This time, it's principle that becomes Nehemiah's protection. Guys, when you do the right thing, and when you make good choices, God can protect you. But when you step outside of God's will, you're on your own. And that's when you become prone to danger. Notice it's only after Nehemiah makes the right choice that he discerns the real intentions of Shemaiah. Verse 12 tells us, then I perceived that God had not sent him at all, but that he pronounced this prophecy against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. For this reason he was hired, that I should be afraid and act that way and sin so that they might have cause for an evil report, that they might reproach me. But he didn't discern it until he had made the right choice. If we always saw beforehand how that saying no to sin and saying yes to God was going to benefit us, then it would be pretty easy to make good decisions, wouldn't it? But that wouldn't take faith, and that wouldn't take obedience. At the time, fleeing to the temple seemed easier and safer for Nehemiah, but he chose rather to obey God than to take the easy way. This time, again, biblical principle protected him from danger. In verse 14, Nehemiah prays, my God, remember Tobiah and Sanballat according to these their works, and the prophetess Noadiah and the rest of the prophets who would have made me afraid. And this is the first mention here of these false prophets. and particularly this woman named Noadiah. She too, I guess, had been hired by Sanballat to create problems for Nehemiah. Verse 15. So the wall was finished on the 25th day of Elul, our August, September, in 52 days. It was an amazing accomplishment for such a short period of time. In just 52 days, they rebuilt these walls. Reminds me of 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 24. He who called you is faithful, who also will do it. In other words, God always starts what he finishes. And here he did it in incredible speed. And notice how Nehemiah's neighbors react. And it happened when all our enemies heard of it and all the nations around us saw these things, that they were very disheartened in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was done by our God. Now notice this, they didn't give the credit to Nehemiah. They knew that for this enormous task to have been accomplished in such a short period of time, this had to be a work of God. And this is the ultimate goal for any work of God. That in the end, the feat will be seen not just as a work for God, but as a work of God. That God receives the credit. In the middle of the 19th century, a revival swept across the island of Wales. People repented of their sin. Entire communities were impacted. A spirit of love and holiness permeated society. Bars and brothels closed down for lack of business. The whole country was impacted by the influence of Christianity. During that time, a preacher by the name of David Morgan was traveling home from church one Sunday with a friend. As they walked, the friend said, "Didn't we have blessed meetings today, Mr. Morgan?" Morgan answered, "Yes." And then after a long pause, he said, "The Lord would give us great things if only he could trust us." His friend replied, "Well, what do you mean?" And David Morgan answered, he said, "If only he could trust us not to steal the glory for ourselves." And then Morgan cried out at the top of his lungs, Psalm 115, a song we sometimes sing at Calvary Chapel. "Not unto us, O Lord, not unto us, but unto thy name give glory." Guys, God will use this church to spread the love and truth of Jesus Christ and build strong walls in our community if we keep our hands off of the glory. If he can trust us not to steal his glory. It's my desire that when people look at Calvary Chapel, that they look past my efforts and they even look past your efforts and they perceive that this work was done by our God. Well, the wall is up. It's been built. It's done. It's finished. You'd think the enemies of Nehemiah would just admit defeat and go home, but not so. Verse 17. "Also in those days, the nobles of Judah sent many letters to Tobiah, and the letters of Tobiah came to them. For many in Judah were pledged to him, because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Ara, and his son Jehohanan had married the daughter of Meshulam, the son of Berechiah." Tobiah was an enemy. He had been Sanballat's sidekick. But you see, he had married into an aristocratic Jewish family. And thus he was keeping close ties with some of the nobles of Jerusalem. Verse 19, "Also they reported his good deeds before me and reported my works to him, words to him. Tobiah sent letters to frighten me." Even after the walls were completed, Tobiah was still creating mischief. He's going to turn up again in chapter 13. We'll find him there too. Nehemiah will deal with him.
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies, constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, there's also some great kingdom-minded options. We'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store, or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.